Welcome, everybody, to episode 309 of the RV Podcast.
Welcome, fellow travelers. It's time for another episode of the RV Podcast.
Answering your questions, sharing tips, suggesting great trips and off-the-beaten-path adventures, and always staying on top of the RV lifestyle news you need to know about with great interviews and inside industry information.
Here's your hosts, award-winning journalists Mike and Jennifer Wendland.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the RV Podcast, your guide to freedom and fun through RV travel, no matter what kind of an RV you have. Maybe it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a fifth wheel, a tent. Maybe you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday. Well, this show is for you because on this podcast, we talk about getting out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV lifestyle. So welcome. We are very honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Well, this week on the RV Podcast, we are going to get a little bit frustrated. We're going to talk about the frustrations of getting RV repairs and service. Plus, we're going to look at a new peer-to-peer storage service that will save you up to 50% the cost of commercial RV storage. Kind of taking that, you know, Airbnb peer-to-peer concept and applying it to RV storage. We'll have a really interesting story about that. And we have RV news of the week and a fun off-the-beaten-path report from our friends, the Burkitts. But right now, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hi, my dear.
Hello, Michael.
Well, here we are. We're back. We had some fun camping last week.
It was lots of fun.
And it was a lot of challenges, too.
Well, it all goes hand in hand.
Yes, it does. And that is the attitude. Now, we're pretty positive, and I'm going to talk in just a couple seconds here about some not-so-positive experiences we had. But they were not terrible. They weren't catastrophic. But I think if we're going to really go into some detail about some frustrations we experienced. Not so much to draw attention to us, because ours will get solved. It's not going to be a big problem. But it illustrates, I think, some things that we have been hearing a lot of from RVers, and that is how bad it is getting RV repair and service. But we did have a great time camping. We went to Michiana along the Indiana, southwestern Michigan border in an area rich with lakes. And we had one incident that was kind of funny, and that was your bacon cooking. You shared it on our Sunday Night Ask Us Anything show. But tell everybody in the podcast what happened. That was fun.
We were leaving, and I decided I had 4 strips of bacon, so I'd cook up the 4 strips of bacon. And before, we hardly had any smoke whatsoever, and the smoke detector went off. And you were in the shower. Most people, yeah.
Okay, I know, but you kept saying, Mike, come fix this. And, duh, I can't.
Anyway, I couldn't unscrew to take the battery out.
Of the smoke detector.
So I figured you'd be out shortly, but it seemed to take you forever to get out.
That's because there was this horrible beep, beep, beep.
And Bo, it was really hurting his ears.
It was so loud that it brought people, because I was thinking about getting out, and then I suddenly heard you talking with people who were standing right outside the door.
The people that owned the park came to see what was going on.
That's how, and they were up a hill.
This noise was very loud. Very, very loud.
Anyway.
I mean, I don't think it needs to be that loud.
Obviously it was very effective. I guess if we had collapsed, it would have brought somebody in.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have dragged us out, but we did not have smoke inhalation, and eventually you took the bacon outside and cooked it.
Yeah, I kept taking the pan outside, then I put it back on the burner. I opened all the windows, opened everything I could open to get some air moving. But the thing is, I think we have to somehow, I have to learn how to turn off, deactivate the smoke detector.
Well, actually, there. After you shared that on our YouTube show the other night, I got a couple of emails, and our friends, they have this three names, Tandy, something and something, and their dog, I think it is. Anyway, they sent us a note about how they replaced that smoke detector on their RV with one that has an easy switch. You can flip up a little cover and turn it off.
Oh, you definitely need that.
Because the smoke detector is too close to the burners on the in the galley.
Making toast, sometimes smoke detector will go off.
Even if it's not burned toast.
It's just a couple
toast.
Beeps, yeah. You know, and it shouldn't go off.
So we'll have to.
It's pretty sensitive.
But it was kind of funny because it brought everybody from all around, and I'm in there trying to think about wrapping a towel around myself and helping, and then I hear Jennifer talking to a bunch of people, and then, oh, man. So it was kind of fun. But we had a good time. We went down to Elkhart, Indiana, on a couple of days and had some stuff there. We had we'll share that all in a video coming up in about 2 weeks. We'll have that video, 2 or 3 weeks. But we got a video this week, I think, that'll be a lot of fun. And that video is going to be on the world's best dog park, off-leash dog park. And it's one that we know very well because we go to it every day.
Just about every day.
And
or else there's no living with Bo.
There's no living with Bo. We were there this morning, and he does love it. So, but we thought we'd share it because if we ran into that dog park that we go to every day, anywhere in the country, we would have stopped and done a story on it because it's that awesome of a park. But sometimes, you know, when you're familiar with something, you know, oh, everybody knows that. Well, we'll show you where we like to take Bo. And if you have a dog, I think you'll get a kick out of it. And if you don't have a dog, there's some nice pictures in it. So watch that. I want to get serious here for a moment. And you can interrupt me anytime you want if I start to say things that are inopportune. But this does need to, we've talked before about the problems with RV repair and service. And so I'm just going to use some examples from us about some minor problems we had. And later on in the questions of the week, you're going to hear a lot from people, RVers, who have really serious problems. But, you know, I think the first thing that, to put all this conversation about RV repair and service in perspective, is the first thing you learn as an RV owner, is it not, is that if something can break, it will.
Right.
I mean, it does.
It's like your home. Things break, except things are more apt to break in an RV because you're moving down the road, shaking everything.
Absolutely. It's like an earthquake, constant earthquake. The second thing that you will learn very quickly is that getting RV repair and service is never an easy task. That's the other thing that you will find out. And that right now is playing out as one of the top reasons a lot of RV full-timers are coming off the road. RV repair and service is nothing like automobile service. They used to have a lot of problems, but they've kind of solved those. And usually you can get your car serviced and fixed. I mean, we're getting ours done tomorrow, and they're going to drive to our house, leave us a loaner, take it, work on it a few hours, and then bring it back. And I think that's typical of a lot of dealerships that will do that. But with an RV, getting parts, getting warranty service, scheduling repairs, easily it can take weeks to get an appointment, and then all too often more weeks once the RV is in the shop. And even new RVs have issues. And I mean, just a couple little things that happened to us last week in our 2-month-old brand new RV. The door to our brand new Dometic refrigerator fell off just like that. Now, we liked that refrigerator a lot. We had it on the same model RV we had just before we got this new one. It's kind of neat. It's a three-way. It works, you know, on 12 volts. It works on LP gas, and it works when you're plugged in. And what's unique about ours, it opens on both sides, the left or the right. And we had no problems with that refrigerator on the previous model. And so far in our 2 months, it's been okay here. But last week, as we were about to prepare lunch, it just kind of fell open. It just fell off.
Yeah, one side. If you open it a certain way, it just falls off, which startles you.
Yeah, and it's heavy. It's a big door. So I thought, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Because, you know, we were going to be camping. We need our food cold. I had just shot a video earlier showing how effective it was, that it was 3 degrees in the freezer and it was 37 degrees in the main part of the fridge, and the door fell off. So remember I said it opens on both sides. So it wasn't, you know, I picked it up and I looked, and you could see that, you know, there's two pins at the top, two pins at the bottom, and I kind of lined them up and gave a firm push on the top right pin, and the door's on. But then the next time we opened the door, it fell off again.
Yeah, something's not quite right. It needs to be adjusted.
I couldn't find any place to tighten the pins, and eventually we found that if we opened it on one side, the right side, it would most often work, or it would often work for a couple of times at least, maybe every three or four times, it would fall off again. And if we, whenever we tried opening on the left side, off it came. Now, as I said, I wondered if there's pins that can be adjusted. I don't know. So we kind of said, well, we can live with that. We'll get it fixed, but it's not a good thing. So next day, we're traveling through rural southwestern Michigan, and we found a county park that we kind of liked. And we said, well, let's stop and have lunch here, and we'll do a little day camping, maybe take Bo for a walk, maybe take a nap. You know, we've been known to do that. So we pulled in, and of course, I turned off the engine, and we're running on the inverters, you know, the battery and the inverters, and carefully, we opened the right side of the refrigerator and got out some food. Carefully, we shut it again, and well, it seemed to stay in place. So we're feeling good. We started the microwave and heated up the food. We were running that, of course, off the 2,000-watt inverter and our two lithium batteries. We finished lunch, carefully put the leftovers back in the refrig, again, carefully using the right side, and off came the door. Well, we got it back on again, but wait, there's more. After getting the door back on the fridge, I went to charge some batteries for my camera. And that's when I found out that the inverter had stopped working. My 120-volt AC plugs were deader than a doornail. I checked the inverter. All the lights were off. It was powerless. Now, I suspect a blown fuse. And it wasn't any of the breakers inside the coach, but back towards the lithium batteries where the inverter connects, the cable for the inverter, there's a 150-amp fuse, and the only way to be sure it's blown is to take off the very heavy cables that connect the fuse between the battery cable and the generator cable. Well, the safe way to do that is to disconnect the cables from the batteries, and I got to tell you, I'm just not comfortable doing that, going in and opening up all that stuff and taking those, you know, I mean, that's a lot of electrical juice going through those things. So I think I'll leave that to the experts at our dealership. And I called those guys, and as always, they were great. They took down the serial number of my Dometic refrigerator, and they said they'd start the process of getting a replacement door. And they were reasonably confident they could address the fuse issue or whatever it was that killed the inverter. So we booked an appointment for the following week. And the problem is it's a 400-mile round trip for us to take the RV to the dealership, which is located across the state from us. I mean, we literally have to get up about 5 a.m., leave by 6, and then, you know, you end up most of those services, you spend the whole day, and then you got to drive back. So I called the day before our appointment, and they hadn't heard back from Dometic. And because of COVID, they were unsure whether Dometic was even had people at their factory or wherever they were shipping replacement parts. No one was answering their emails. And maybe the Dometic people have experienced this before, and maybe all the door needs is some kind of an adjustment. But until they tell us that, repair is up in the air. Well, they told me to check back at the end of the week, said the service guy, and maybe then they'll have an idea, and I will. Now, again, we can use the RV with that bulky door as long as we don't mind it, you know, falling off every three or four times. But the inverter issue means there's no boondocking. And so we have kind of canceled a planned trip that we were going to do to southeastern Michigan. That's our telephone going off. And, of course, Bo hears it and immediately thinks it's a cause for alarm. So we kind of, there's going to be no traveling. And I said, well, I got an idea. Actually, Jennifer had that. I said, why don't we call our friend Joe, who we've used before, who runs a mobile RV service business near our home. We'll scratch that. I got a hold of Joe, make that used to run a service center here. Joe has come in off the road now, and instead he's opened a small little repair shop in a city, you know, I don't know, 45 minutes away from us, I guess. And I said, well, I'll drive up and just kind of wait. And he said, no, you can't do that. I got so many in here. You're just going to have to drop it off and leave it until I can get around to it. And I don't know how long that'll take. So Bo decided he's got to come in here and tell us.
We need to hear this.
In case we didn't hear him way out there. But we got it. It's under control. So this is so frustrating. I mean, RV repair and service should not be so challenging. Now, I know many of you could tell stories that put ours to shame. And in fact, in our question of the week, we're going to share some of the responses and some of the things that you folks have been telling us on our RV Lifestyle Facebook group. But every week I hear of people who are stuck for days on end in campgrounds waiting for a service appointment, or they're living in the parking lot of RV dealers waiting for them to fix their RV, or they're having to rent a hotel room as their RV waits for parts, or they had to rent cars for one-way trips back home because all they could do was drop off their RV at the dealer until the service techs worked through the backlog of repairs to get to theirs. I mean, even RV emergency service techs like our friend Joe, the ones that are still in business, they're overwhelmed. Our son had a travel trailer, and he had to get a half dozen things fixed. I think it's 2 years old, 2 or 3 years old on their travel trailer. And it took the tech 2 weeks to get there. Showed up at 7 p.m. and worked until 10 p.m. Like I said, we understand that things break. And as Jennifer said, driving an RV down the road is like subjecting it to a 5.0 earthquake for hours on end. And when you think of it that way, it's amazing that things don't break even more and that they work as well as they do. But they do break. And there is clearly something broken with the RV repair and service side of the business. I want to be sure that you understand, I don't blame the dealers or the service techs for these frustrations. I have found those guys to be doing the absolute best they can. They are overworked. They face a constant deluge of requests for service and repairs. In fact, they kind of remind me of triage doctors at a hospital, prioritizing who's the most ill, what needs to be fixed right now, what can wait. They do that similar triage every day. But I do blame the parts suppliers. Who, COVID or no COVID, are just not stepping up and meeting the repair and the warranty and the service demands. The industry has been booming for years now, and the service suppliers have not been doing their job. They just have barely been able to make the supplies that people need. If you want to hear about it, take an RV tech out for a beer and just listen to the stories they'll tell you about getting parts and warranties and all that stuff. And I also blame the RV industry as a whole, which is, I think, more interested in selling more and more RVs than taking care of their existing customers, or even by making sure that RV repair and service can be done in a timely fashion. Now, our problems are going to be really easy to solve, the door, the inverter, at least I think so. The only reason I share them in such detail here is to kind of illustrate the frustration involved in getting things fixed and how disruptive that is on those who find their vacations and their getaways, in the case of full-timers, their entire lives, disrupted, put on hold until somebody can get the parts and fix them. I don't know what the answer is. We'll share a little bit more of this in the questions of the week. And I'll also share to you how this all plays out with us. But it is frustrating. Most of the time it's fine and we can make do. But I think of all those whose stories we hear every week, and somebody needs to do something.
I feel sorry for those that really are inconvenienced. Ours is a minor thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I think, the detail of it is, thing after thing after thing, and then how do you get it fixed? Oh, we can't go. We got to put it off here. Yeah. And when can you then go camping? We were going to go here. We got reservations. Right. It's
kind of like 2020.
Yeah, it is the whole year, don't you think? It's crazy. Hey, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And this will be all posted, of course, on our RV Lifestyle blog. And you can comment on the blog. We always have the show notes posted for our podcast. And that's at rvlifestyle.com/309. 309 being the number of the episode. And it'll take you right to the show notes. But just go to rvlifestyle.com. You'll find it. This part of the RV podcast brought to you by Camping World, America's number one RV dealer. They are your go-to spot for everything outdoors. And Jennifer and I kind of think of it as an oasis for RVers. They've got 225 locations across the country, and there's always one close by. When we need to get the accessories we want for our RV, in fact, we have a complete page with all of the RV and camping supplies that Jennifer and I use or that we recommend. And even better, listeners of the podcast can get 10% off all purchases over $99. You hear us talk about all these little products and the things we use, from camping chairs to my little Tilly hat that I wear. And we just did a big thing on, how you needed some on the blog. We did some thing on why everybody should have a water pressure regulator. So all those things we've put together in a page, all the things we use. And We put it at rvlifestyle.com/campingworld. And if you use the code, you got to use the code RVLifestyle10, RVLifestyle10. They'll give you 10% off all purchases over $99. So check them out. They have all these great supplies, little things you need to keep your RV equipped. RVLifestyle.com/campingworld. That's the address. And the code, once again, is RVLifestyle10.
News. Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, inside information and trends that shape the RV lifestyle. Here's the RV news of the week.
Wildfires burning the West are making headlines this week, closing campgrounds and causing evacuations in many parts of California, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado, to name a few. In California, at least 1 million acres have burned in 7 days, with wildfires reaching historic size. Elsewhere, Utah's Minersville campground was evacuated over the weekend because of wildfires. Arizona officials closed at least 2 campgrounds because of wildfires near Sagrero National Park. And wildfires are raging across large areas of Colorado. Every year around this time, we hear of wildfires in the West. But to us, this year the news seems even more severe. There are more than 100 out-of-control wildfires being reported as we record this episode. And smoke and haze can be seen from California to Kansas.
We just had a post on RVLifestyle.com that we wrote about the dangers of inhaling that smoke. You know, when you're driving in your RV, you may, you know, you get that smoke gets inside the RV, and you may be driving for miles and miles and hours with that stuff, and how the fine smoke particulates can do damage to your lungs. You can check that out at RVLifestyle.com. But man, it's a bad year out there. And while those wildfires have ravaged the West, states, of course, if you've been following the news, you know that along the Gulf of Mexico, they're bracing for not one but 2 hurricanes this week in what is being called an unprecedented event. Storms causing campground closings and evacuations, as you would expect. Hurricane Marco is expected to be a Class 1 hurricane when it hits Louisiana. Laura, at the time of this writing, expected to be Category 2, expected to hit Louisiana, maybe Mississippi, maybe even parts of Alabama. The Gulf Islands National Seashore, Fort Pickens Campground near Pensacola were among many on the coast that were closing because of the storms. And we wrote a story earlier this year that included links to some very helpful sources to help you monitor road and weather emergencies. And you can find that story in the show notes. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/309 and scroll down to the News of the Week section.
We've been telling you it is busy out there. And some national parks are starting to share numbers to define it. The numbers of people visiting Yellowstone National Park in July were up 2% from July 2019. The numbers are up even though we are in the middle of a pandemic, where campgrounds and hotels have reduced their capacity and visitors from other countries are staying home. Yellowstone is seeing visitors from all 50 states, and neighboring Grand Tetons is also seeing an increase in visitors, up 3% from July 2019.
A Kentucky man faces a possible $750,000 fine or 6 months in jail for allegedly violating a quarantine order in the Alberta Rockies. He did it in late June. And as you know, the border to Canada is still closed because of COVID-19. But as we have shared here before, some Americans are kind of illegally sneaking across and visiting Canada's tourist areas in defiance of the law, only to find an angry Canadian population who are calling police. Then they're often ordered to be quarantined. And in this case, this guy's subject to a very hefty fine. On July 31st, Canada tightened its border even more. Americans can pass through if they're headed to Alaska, but they got to go straight to Alaska. They're not supposed to stop or go anywhere unless it's an emergency. And they have to have a tag on their cars, on their mirror, identifying them, the date they have to be out of the country. They're not allowed to stop and visit tourist areas, just go straight through. It's a mess. These closures are expected to go through the end of the month, and there's some talk that they may go all the rest of the year. But $750,000 fine, can you imagine that? 6 months in jail? That's what they're threatening one American with, and we'll kind of see how that one plays out.
Two people who camped at Golden Beach Campground in Raquette Lake, New York, last week tested positive for COVID-19. The two went camping in the Adirondack Area Campground August 15th through 20th. While camping, the couple used the restrooms and shower buildings and also went into nearby towns. Health officials shared the information so anyone who stayed in this area during this time would know. While camping, Mike and I recommend using your RV shower and bathroom as much as possible. And despite the story, camping is considered a relatively low-risk activity in many stories and reports we are monitoring.
This part of the podcast brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, America's number one e-bike brand, offering direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes, free shipping, and a special discount to listeners of the RV podcast. Rad Power Bikes, built for everything, priced for everyone, many different models. They fit every possible variety of rider wants and needs. They can all go 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. They're street legal. Anywhere a bike can go, these e-bikes can go as well. They give you the choice to ride pedal-free with throttle, or you can use five different levels of pedal assist, as much as you want, as little as you want, for an added boost, or combining pedaling and the throttle. Perfect for people who want to get back into riding. You can go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. And the thing about Rad Power Bikes is that they're priced at less than half the cost of comparable bikes in the market because the dealer retail markup chains cut out. They deal directly with consumers. If you mention RV Lifestyle at checkout, they'll give you an additional $75 off. That's a good discount. RV Lifestyle is your coupon code for $75 off, plus you get free shipping. And that's a pretty good deal, too. Visit them, radpowerbikes.com.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers. Here's one of our questions of the week.
All right, at the top of the podcast, we kind of shared our problems with RV repair and service, and I offered some thoughts about it. But on our RV Lifestyle Facebook group, that topic is a very active one. It seems to surface every other day or so. And I want to share one that just came up as we're putting this podcast together. This is from a reader named Todd. And here's what he wrote. He said, I'm new here to our Facebook group and read about quality issues on one of the posts with new RVs. And I can't understand how dealers don't see the need to fix issues like trim panels falling off while on the lot. People spend $27,000 on a fifth wheel and they don't see the need to fix it before customers see it. Well, that little post from Todd in just a couple of hours brought over 60 replies. Matt and Trima, I'll read you some samples. Matt and Trima. If you only knew the problems we have had with our brand new 2020 top-of-the-line fifth wheel, you'd never buy one and absolutely run the other way. Delamination down the side and across the back. A defective roof where a pinhole was found for a leak. Not to mention a roof with blisters. Underbelly keeps coming undone. Shower panels coming undone from the wall. Leaks. The list goes on with close to 40 items. Oh, the washing machine has gone out twice in 6 months, and the oven will not stay lit until after literally about the sixth to eighth time. Man, I have so many pictures and videos that it would make your head spin. I'm working now with a lemon law lawyer. Carolyn offers this advice about dealers who don't fix obvious issues. No one seems to take pride in their work. If they don't fix it before the sale, I'd steer clear from them because they probably have crappy service as well. Camilla, noting that many dealers charge a paperwork fee. Yet in her case, she noted, it's always fun to see the $895 pre-delivery inspection fee on a brand new RV. But in our case, wires were hanging out, moldings were dangling, TV was missing, the coffee stain in the cabin, the hydraulic arm ripped out of the screen door, and so on. Joe says, there's so much demand for RVs now, the factories are rushing to produce as fast as possible. Says Michael, I have a 2019 RV, brand new on the lot. I made a list of 22 items that needed to be fixed before I left the dealer. Now, 1 year later, I have trim pieces falling off, bench seat literally fell apart, and I cannot stop the slide out from leaking during rain. Helen has problems too. What makes me angry, she says, is we bought a brand new Rockwood fifth wheel specifically to avoid these issues. We came to the conclusion it's cheaper for the companies to rush them through and hope people don't return them for warranty work than to make them right the first time. What is funny is that we talked to someone we met at a campground who had a much more expensive fifth wheel than us. When we said we wish we had gone ahead and spent more money for one like his and avoided these problems, he laughed and told us his sad story with warranty work. It was as bad as ours. Victoria reported, "We are shopping, and I'm amazed that at one lot at a local dealer, it was full of different size and shapes and brands of campers. And so I asked if we could see a couple of them, and the RV dealer said, those campers aren't for sale. They're waiting to be fixed. The lot was full." And finally, Chuck says, "Sadly, what this industry needs is competition from quality overseas manufacturing, such as happened in the auto industry. I hate to think of the crap we'd be driving, and if it had not been for quality Japanese cars forcing the American manufacturers to up their game. Seems to me that one good American manufacturer could provide a competition." Folks, there are 60 different reports like that to that post from Todd, and they were all filed from all over the country in just a few hours. These are real stories, true stories. They involve many different RV brands, manufacturers, and dealers. I'm a very positive and optimistic guy. I said that earlier, but that does not mean turning a blind eye to these serious issues. You can read Todd's posts and replies. I'll put a link in the show notes. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/309. rvlifestyle.com/309.
Hey, fellow travelers. Want to have your voice featured on the RV podcast?
Send us your questions or comments. Send an audio file to mike@rvlifestyle.com. Or better yet, use our RV podcast voicemail number, 586-372-6990. 586-372-6990.
We want to hear from you. Call 586-372-6990.
This part of the podcast brought to you by Battle Born Batteries, makers of quality, safe, and reliable lithium batteries that can be installed in just about every RV. Jennifer, I have lithium batteries in ours, and we have been thrilled with them. Battle Born's motto is get out there and stay out there, and that is their mission. They provide RV and marine batteries that with the highest quality, lithium iron phosphate technology. The thing about lithium is they become, I think, the de facto standard now for RVers because whether it's a Class A, Class C, a B van, a towable, a fifth wheel, a bunkhouse, a cab over camper, lithium batteries will last longer. They will be easier to maintain. They will charge fuller. They will charge faster. There really is no maintenance, in fact. And the ones that Battleborn sells will probably drop into any size RV that you have. They're all protected by a 10-year guarantee. You need to really reach out to them. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/lithium, rvlifestyle.com/lithium. Tell them about the RV you have, what you need, and they'll help you out. And when you do that, please, please tell them that you heard about them on the RV podcast.
Time now for the RV podcast interview of the week. Interesting, entertaining, and helpful information about the RV lifestyle. Here's Mike with this week's interview.
Well, cold weather. I hate to throw a damper on this beautiful summer we've all been having, but cold weather is, you know, coming quick, just around the corner. And a lot of RVers are thinking about putting their RVs in storage. And as they start to check it out, they are cringing at the prices they're finding. I mean, it is very expensive to store an RV. But from that problem has come a solution. Just as Airbnb and VRBO introduced peer-to-peer vacation rentals, and then in the RV field, Harvest Host and Boondockers Welcome and Overnight RV Parking brought that same concept to offset the cost of expensive campgrounds, so has a man named Joseph Woodbury brought the peer-to-peer trend to the RV storage industry. Everyday people and even some businesses around the country are opening up their property, their driveways, even their garage for RV storage. And the cost is up to 50% cheaper than commercial storage places. Joseph Woodbury is our guest on the RV Podcast Interview of the Week, and his website is neighbor.com. Well, to learn more about this, we are joined by Joseph Woodbury. He is the founder and the CEO of neighbor.com. Joseph, welcome to the podcast. So glad to have you on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Tell us exactly what neighbor.com does and obviously how it is of interest, particularly to RVers and particularly about at this time of year when we're starting to look at cold weather and time to put the RV away for a while.
Sure. Neighbor.com, it's pretty simple. It's a platform where you can go on and list space that you might have in or around your home. Could be a garage or an attic or a basement, any space that's unused, and you can rent it out to one of your neighbors that needs storage. And they could come over and store their boxes in your basement or their RV on your driveway or their boat in your garage. And that way you earn money and they get a very affordable place to store.
It's kind of borrowing on the idea of, I guess, Airbnb, and then we look at things like VRBO for vacation places, and then in the RV world, Harvest Host and Boondockers Welcome, camping, RV camping overnight, that kind of stuff. This is a really smart idea. In fact, I just did an interview last week about churches that are letting folks park in their lots. So this is kind of a... It's technically called peer-to-peer, I guess. So how would an RVer find storage for their RV on neighbor.com?
Yeah, we try to make it pretty simple. You can go on and you can type in your address and search close to you. You can type in the dimensions of your RV so you find a spot that's just the right length and width for your RV. And our site will pull up all the sites that are around you that are rentable. You'll be able to see the price, how frequently you could access the space. You'll be able to read a little bio about the person that you'll be renting from. You can message them, get to know them all through the site. And then, you know, when you're ready to select a space, you can just reserve the space right online. We handle all of the payments so you don't have to deal with, you know, handing cash back and forth like you used to have to do. We'll make sure your payment gets collected and sent to the host's bank account every single month, and make sure that you get everything you need. We also provide insurance.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about
that. We're actually the only storage provider in the country that we know of that provides $25,000 in insurance for every single item that you store on our platform. So we're much safer alternative to, you know, one of those self-storage units that you could go get that's completely uninsured.
Now, of course, that works out well if you have items, you know, like boxes and stuff in a storage unit. But an RV is it's usually worth a lot more than $25,000. What happens in that case? That's kind of like every other, you know, you're on your own, right? You know, you got to evaluate it and evaluate the host.
Sure, and most RV renters will actually have a policy on their RV. Of course, it's a vehicle. You typically have insurance on that vehicle. If you were to go to store at an RV storage location, a professional RV storage location, they would provide you $0 in insurance and expect you to insure the entire vehicle yourself. What we do is we go kind of a step further and we provide you $25,000 in insurance on your RV on top of whatever insurance you may already have on that vehicle. And so in every way, we're more convenient and more secure than the existing solution.
Now, how about the pricing on it? On neighbor.com, it says sometimes 50% less. Give us a rough idea for, you know, an RV, which can range, I guess, from 25 feet to 40 feet, 45 feet.
Yeah.
How does that work pricing wise? I know everybody's different, right? So, but give us some ballparks.
So what we do is we know that our hosts, when they're creating a listing to rent out their space, most of them have no idea how to price their space and they need some guidance. And so we've spent several years creating an algorithm, that will take some inputs. It'll take your location, what city you're in, what neighborhood within that city you're in, what are the dimensions of the space, some other amenities, you know, is it climate controlled, other factors, and it will give a recommended price to that host. They can choose to follow our recommended price or choose to, you know, price it at any price they'd like. They're 90% more likely to be rented out when they follow our pricing recommendations. And so, you know, to your question, what is a typical RV space going to run on Neighbor's platform? That's going to vary by market. So, you know, we have many spaces in San Francisco, California, and those are going to be much more expensive than a space in Salt Lake City, Utah. But, for example, a space in Salt Lake City, Utah, you can find a spot to store your RV for, you know, $70, $80 a month. Much, much cheaper than you're going to find going to a professional facility that can charge you anywhere from, you know, $250, $300, sometimes even $400 a month, depending on the location. So it, in each market, while the price varies on our platform, in every market, it always ends up being around 40 to 50% cheaper than the existing storage market.
I'm looking at your website, neighbor.com, now, and I've scrolled around the country, and it, the rates really are pretty good. I'm looking at one. We spent a lot of time down in Florida, and if I wanted to keep my RV there, I have a 40 by 30 space near us that I could get for $22.50 a month. A 30 by 40 space. I'm sorry. That's huge for $22.50. Now, up in the Detroit area where I'm coming to you from now, you know, it's a big metropolitan area and the rates can be 60 to 100 bucks a month. If I just go a few miles out of town, they drop down to 45. So it as you say, it depends on market. But I am amazed at how many spots you have. Some appear to be just driveways, others parking lots, commercial parking lots, and others are actually indoor storage as well, in a barn or in a covered building. There's some pretty good options here.
That's right, and this is such a big market. You know, when we created this company, we were amazed at how big of a market it is. Americans spend over $40 billion a year on self storage. It's, you know, we've now built more self storage locations than there are McDonald's, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Domino's Pizzas, Wendy's, Burger King's, Walmart's, Home Depot's, and Costco's combined.
Wow.
In the United States. That's how much storage we've built. And so it's really an industry that needed some innovation. And our innovation was really just realizing that, hey, we don't need to build all of that space. It's really a waste. There's plenty of unused space, completely empty, sitting all around us. And a lot of those people are willing to rent that space out for very reasonable prices because they need the income to help pay the mortgage, to help save for a down payment on a or you know, a vacation. And so if we can connect those two people together, it's really a win-win solution for everyone. And it makes it so that we don't have to keep building, you know, these eyesore storage facilities in our towns. You know, someone was just telling me the other day, you could fit in the 3 billion square feet of self-storage in the United States, you could fit every man, woman, and child simultaneously in a storage unit. And they'd be comfortable, you know, they wouldn't be even squished together. And that's just excessive, especially when there is so much space all around us already.
Well, it's a great idea, and innovation peer-to-peer, this certainly is a model that is working well. I have one last question, and I guess that would depend, but one of the things RVers do is they may put it in storage, but they want to come up and visit it every month or every couple of weeks, maybe run the generator, make sure everything is working and the batteries are good. Is there any blanket policy, or does that vary by location?
Yeah, so when a host is creating their listing, that's one of the several questions that we'll ask them. We'll ask them, how frequently can a renter access your space? And they can choose from a number of options. Many will choose 24/7 access, especially for an outdoor location. They'll say, you know what, come get your RV whenever you'd like. For indoor locations, some will say business hours only, or they'll say by appointment only, meaning, you know, you have to reach out to the host in advance and set up a time to come by to access your space. And once we collect that information from the host, that information is displayed right on the listing itself. And so the renter who's looking to store their RV can see before they book the space, they can already see how frequently they'll be able to access that space, and they can take that into account when choosing which space to book.
Well, neighbor.com is the site. Joseph Woodbury, the founder and the CEO, is our guest, and I want to thank you so much for making some time for us to talk about it. It's a great idea, and I am sure people are going to do it. One thing, too, if those are people who have spaces and they want to have it offered to people, I'm sure they can contact you through neighbor.com as well.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right. Joseph, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
The interview of the week is brought to you by SunshineStateRVs.com, where every new motorhome is delivered to the customer free anywhere in the continental U.S. Sunshine State RVs, they've been a sponsor here of the RV Podcast for years, and we just can't speak highly enough of Nick Schmidt and his crew there at Sunshine State RVs. They're based in Gainesville, Florida, but in these days of COVID, so many people are just shopping online at SunshineStateRVs.com. For one thing, they have perhaps the largest inventory of previously owned RVs that you'll find anywhere in North America. But they also sell a full line in stock of brand new RVs from all the major small motorhome manufacturers. They have the Winnebago Travato, the Winnebago Era, Coachman, the Beyond, the Galleria, the American Patriot, the Fleetwood. I can't name all of them. That's how many new models that they have. And if you're looking for a used RV, they have them in great shape from the early 90s to the current year from all the major popular brands, Pleasureway, Winnebago, Leisure Travel, Coachman, Road Trek. You won't find a wider selection anywhere. And they all go through a very thorough 172-point inspection. So just go to the website, check them out, and you'll see what we're talking about when we say you can't find a bigger selection of small RVs anywhere else. It's just go to them at SunshineStateRVs.com.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook.
Here's Mike.
Well, I don't know if you guys are hungry right now, or many of you listen to us at the gym as you're working out, or some of you in the morning commute or the morning or the afternoon return. Then I know you're hungry. Maybe you're doing some housework. Maybe you're in the RV on a hike or just sitting in a chair looking at some beautiful countryside. But I'm going to make you hungry when you hear Tom and Patty Burkett, our Off the Beaten Path correspondents, in this week's report.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. Maybe food stands were the food trucks of the 80s. Gus Glava built one on the parking lot of his bar in 1987. He hoped it would get his new son-in-law out of the steel mills, which promised a short lifetime of physical ills. Bob, who had married Glava's daughter Donna, turned out to be a great cook. Donna turned out to be a first-rate organizer and manager. Starting with the 12-by-15-foot stand powered by extension cords, the business prospered, adding on several times, but never changing its menu of pit-cooked beef and a few well-prepared side dishes. Now at 5 locations, Chaps Pit Beef has become a go-to spot for this Baltimore favorite and long outlived the business that spawned it. Nowadays, believe it or not, it sits in the parking lot of an all-nude review club.
The first time we tried Pit Beef was at the Delta Cardiff Heritage Festival in tiny Delta, Pennsylvania. The town is Welsh by culture and originally home to miners who collected and split slate from the nearby deposits to make roofing shingles. One day we'll tell you more about that. It's a small festival. The day we were there, maybe 50 people were in attendance. We noticed around lunchtime that a line began forming at one corner of the picnic pavilion on the grounds of the park where the festival was being held. At events like this, you just can't ignore a line, so we queued up too.
About 10 minutes later, a man walked up to a homemade barrel grill outside the pavilion and threw back the lid. Inside were several blackened roasts and a couple of hams. He pulled the cover off a table, revealing a meat slicer, several bags of sandwich buns, and a big jar of what turned out to be horseradish sauce. A collective sigh passed through the assembled crowd as he pulled one of the roasts from the grill, laid it on the slicer, and went to work. More beef than a person should eat at one sitting was piled onto bun after bun. The line moved forward, and the level of the horseradish sauce lowered steadily. It was a life-changing experience, that sandwich, and it propelled us into the search for pit beef whenever we're in the area.
As foodstuffs go, pit beef isn't all that old. It made its early appearances along the National Road in Baltimore's working-class neighborhoods in the late 60s, but didn't really become a Baltimore thing until the early 80s. Pit beef isn't technically barbecue, or so we're told, because it's fast-cooked over a hot, hot fire rather than slow-cooked. Devotees of both will argue for days about the distinction, but it makes no difference to the taste. Some prefer thick hand-cut slices on white bread, and some love wafer-thin machine-cut slices piled on a roll. But whatever the form, no one would ever turn it down, whatever form it takes. Vegetarians have been known to forego even that practice when faced with a pit beef sandwich.
So we stood in line, 6 feet apart, with the face-masked lunchtime crowd that trailed well out of the door at the original Chaps on Baltimore's east side. There were construction workers, hospital staff, men and women in suits, families, and even a man with what must have been a very well-trained service dog in the line. Soon enough, we were at the counter, then picking up a surprisingly heavy bag to carry out. As promised, the meat was cooked to perfection, piled high on the bun, and seasoned just right. It was way too big and went down way too easy. The Washington Post reviewed the best pit beef in Maryland, and Chaps only got an honorable mention, so I'm sure we have much pleasure waiting on our next visit.
Roast beef sandwiches are something of a regional specialty across the country, and you can find a mouth-watering variety if you keep your eyes open. From Italian beef in Chicago to roast beef po' boys in New Orleans, the Gooch in Seattle to beef on Weck in Buffalo, or French dip in Denver to the hot brown in Louisville, you can get your fill of lovingly prepared meat on a bun out here off the beaten path.
And Off the Beaten Path brought to you this week by Nomad Internet. Nomad Internet is what Jennifer and I use when we are on the road now, and it is designed especially for traveling nomads, RVers who demand truly unlimited high-speed internet. Now, Nomad Internet does this by combining the latest cellular technology of all four of the major providers with a single plan. All of the Nomad plans have special data plans that are not available to the public, like truly unlimited 4G LTE connectivity with no data limit, no throttling, no contract, and a 14-day no-risk trial. Now, you can get all the details at nomadinternet.com, all one word, nomadinternet.com. Nomad will have you up and running. They can do it in as little as 24 to 48 hours. And if you use the coupon code RVLifestyle25, all one word, RVLifestyle25, you'll get $25 off the setup fee for whatever plan you choose. Visit them at nomadinternet.com.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Well, this has been 2020, a terrible year for those who are involved with the RV show schedules. I mean, most major cities and many smaller ones have had RV shows on the calendar for months and months. Usually they're somebody having a show near you every week. They've all been canceled since spring. Even the big ones like the Hershey RV show, America's largest, which was supposed to be coming up next week, closed, canceled. The RV open house in Elkhart, Indiana, which isn't really a public show, but it's a major industry event, and we get lots of attention with it. That's canceled this year. The California RV show in October, it's another giant show, shut down. So pretty much all RV shows and events canceled from spring through this fall. But this week, we've resumed our RV events calendar because there's some cautious optimism in the industry at least, that shows and RV exhibitions will again be happening right after the first of the year. And to that end, we have two to report. First, the 2021 Florida RV Super Show is on, at least so far it's on. Dates are January 13th through the 17th, 2021, at the Florida State Fairgrounds in Tampa. And I'll put a link in the show notes for you. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/309 and scroll all the way down to where we talk about the RV events calendar. But Tampa is still technically on. They are expected to start actually selling tickets this fall, and it has not yet been canceled, and people are pretty excited about that because that will be the first major public show since everything shut down, at least, you know, the giant one. And second of all, this one is on too. This is another huge event. It's the annual Quartzsite, Arizona, Quartzsite, Arizona Sports Vacation and RV Show out there in the desert in Quartzsite, Arizona. That is scheduled for January 16th through the 24th. I heard from show organizers this week, as a matter of fact, and they got the official okay from health officials out there. The details are available at quartzsitervshow.com, but I'll put a link so you can find it in our show notes when you are able to stop. I know many of you are driving. It's hard to write those links down. So if you just can remember rvlifestyle.com/309, it'll take you to the show notes. Now, these two shows, of course, hopefully are the start of many more that we'll be seeing. I wanted to give you those, that particularly Quartzsite, because I know a lot of you have to make your plans to go out there. That's the big boondocking area in the desert around Quartzsite. You want to start making your plans, and they assure us that they've talked to officials and they're on. They'll have face masks and whatever other things they need to do, but start planning for it. All this, of course, subject to change should the COVID situation be different than it is now. But as of now, it looks like the RV show season will be starting again right after the first of the year. We'll keep you updated.
And that wraps up another episode of the RV Podcast with Mike and Jennifer Wendland.
New episodes are released every Wednesday, and the best way to stay connected is to subscribe to the RV Podcast.
We're in all the popular podcast apps, and you can also listen on the rvlifestyle.com travel blog.
Till next time, happy trails, fellow travelers. We'll be looking for you down the road.
All right. That's a lot of stuff we talked about in this episode. Again, you can find the show notes, rvlifestyle.com/309. It's kind of like a giant transcript of the whole show. Hey, on behalf of Jennifer and our dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendland saying thank you guys so much for putting us in your ears this week. Happy trails. Be safe.